On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
You heard a little bit in the news headlines there with Stephen about the Taoiseach Micheál Martin going on Andrew Marr this morning on the BBC. Here is a little bit more of what he had to say about what happened in the last 48 hours and what was a fairly frenetic series of developments regarding the Northern Ireland Protocol.
I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from how all of this transpired, because it took 4 years to put the protocol together. We've been 4 years negotiating the fallout of the Brexit referendum, the putting together of a European-UK trade and cooperation agreement, and critically the putting in place of the withdrawal agreement and the protocol to facilitate access for Northern Ireland's economy to the single market, as well as, of course, to the UK market, and to avoid a hard border on the island of Ireland, and to facilitate seamless economic activity on the island of Ireland. I mean, it's a good thing, the protocol, overall. There are issues there that we have to fine-tune and work out. But essentially, I think there are positives there, medium-term, for Northern Ireland in terms of its economic development, which we should not underestimate.
Well, let's talk about the medium term, because Arlene Foster described this as an act of incredible hostility to Northern Ireland. And now we've got people in Northern Ireland and in London speaking of invoking Article 16 in the reverse direction. What do you think are the possible long-term consequences of this row?
Well, 2 points I would make. It certainly wasn't an act of hostility by the European Commission. And my experience all along throughout the Brexit debate has been an acute awareness, notwithstanding the events of Friday, on behalf of the European Union member states and indeed the Commission, about getting the Northern Ireland situation right and supporting the overall edifice of the Good Friday Agreement, and making sure that we would negotiate structures and mechanisms like the protocol that would facilitate the continuation of the Good Friday Agreement and all of its aspects. Secondly, in terms of the implications here, I do think, and having discussed this with the British Prime Minister and indeed with the Commission, that there's an opportunity now to re-engage, to make sure that the protocol operates smoothly and efficiently on behalf of all citizens on the island, and particularly around issues pertaining to the movement of goods between the UK and Northern Ireland. It took 4 years to put this together. We are only 4 weeks into the agreement and into the operation of the protocol. There are bound to be teething problems, yes. But I do acknowledge the need for engagement here on all sides between the European Union, the United Kingdom and the Irish government, and indeed the Northern Ireland executive.
There are bound to be teething problems. That was the assessment of Taoiseach Micheál Martin speaking to Andrew Marr earlier on. We're joined on the line by the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou McDonald. Mary Lou, do you believe that the events of the last 48 hours are merely teething problems?
Well, good afternoon, Gavin. And can I firstly say that I, for one, am looking forward to the 1st of February and for, I hope, the beginning of springtime. And hopefully that'll bring some optimism to yourself, Gavin, and to the rest of us.
Should it be a public holiday, do you think?
St. Bridget's Day, absolutely. Yeah, why not?
Okay. Was it a teething issue Friday night?
Well, look, it was obviously a grave error of judgment. It was a mistake. It was a mistake that was compounded by the fact that nobody had, it seems, been made aware that this was the thinking within the Commission, including, it seems, Michel Barnier and his team. And certainly Dublin had no word of it. London had no word of it. So it caused a level of deep concern and annoyance, I imagine, for all concerned. It was quickly corrected. So that has to be said. You see, the whole Brexit debate has been framed by an understanding by most of us and an acknowledgement that there was never any good Brexit and that Brexit was going to bring real and enduring damage, not least to Ireland. And the protocol was secured over a very protracted period of time to just afford some basic levels of protection for the island as a whole. The Brexit debate, the brinkmanship from the Tory government went right to the wire. And one of the reasons why we have these teething problems, Gavin, is because there wasn't the initially envisaged period for preparation. So everything was very last minute. And when things are done in a very last minute way, there are consequences for that.
So you don't think this would have all arisen if a deal had been reached before Christmas Eve, say? that if the deal had been reached in good time, that this sort of thing wouldn't have arisen?
Well, absolutely. I think had the deal been achieved in a more orderly and a more organised fashion, it would have given everybody concerned, including people in Britain, British business, time to prepare. So, but that's not how it happened. As we all know, it went right down to the wire. That's not good practice. It's not a good plan. It's not a good way of doing business. It's the way Boris Johnson does business. So it's how it happened. But yes, so there are teething problems. But let's not, you know, for a second imagine that all of the problems with Brexit are just short term and teething problems. Brexit is a game changer. It's for keeps. It's not good. And it will cause us long-term and significant difficulties. So we need to be just very real about that. The events over Friday evening and into Friday night certainly took everybody by surprise and shock. And I'm just relieved that the right decision was made, that the European Commission backed away from this proposed triggering of Article 16. And can I say to those who are now saying that the British Prime Minister should reciprocate, should enter into kind of a tit-for-tat triggering of Article 16, that would be absolutely irresponsible and should not be countenanced. And really those that are making that call, I think, need to give their heads a shake and just reconsider their position.
And that includes the Northern Irish First Minister, Arlene Foster,
yes,
who's been calling for that.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
One of the things that Friday night outlined, although it was all hypothetical and proposed and it never came to pass, is that we do now have a situation where Brussels has the power to create a trade barrier on this island, a trade frontier, some sort of checkpoint needed on the border, without the Irish government even getting an advance heads up. How do you feel about that?
Well, that needs to be corrected for, because that's entirely unacceptable. I mean, the securing of the protocol itself was, of course, led in the first instance. The negotiations were led by Michel Barnier on behalf of the European institutions. But obviously, the entire Irish system and Irish politics right across the island invested very considerably in this process. It also had enjoyed the support of a very significant political effort from the United States of America. And the idea of the protocol is to give a level of assurance and reassurance to everybody concerned that there cannot be a sudden, you know, hardening of borders, of trade borders on the island of Ireland. This is a mechanism to protect us. It can't become a mechanism by which, with no advance notice and in an ad hoc way, we can wake up one morning to discover that a decision such as was threatened at the weekend has been taken. So I think there's a discussion that needs to be had, a very frank discussion with the European Commission. I think we need to reorientate all of ourselves, remind everyone the purpose of the protocol, and ensure that we don't have a repeat performance of what was unfolding on Friday night. And I think that level of common understanding is necessary just to give the kind of stability that all of us require. And for all of us, and by all of us, I mean not just those of us here in the 26 counties, I mean people in the north. I don't just mean nationalists and Republicans. I also mean for unionism. We've lived through times of great trauma. We are going through very, very difficult times nationally and internationally. COVID primarily being the primary driver of uncertainty and anxiety, but also Brexit. And I think all of our people, whatever your political stance or perspective, we need that sense of just good order and no surprises, and certainly no drama such as we saw unfold on Friday.
Let's talk about COVID then, and the handling of COVID. Sinn Féin has been calling for an all-island approach ever since the outbreak. You're at least quite consistent in that. A lot of people would wonder what you have done to try and put that into place.
Well, you're right to say that this has we've taken this position from the word go. In fact, I remember initially on Leo Varadkar's watch when he was acting Taoiseach, the national plan, as it was called, was produced at that time. And I remember saying to him at a meeting that the problem with your national plan is that it's not national. And what I meant by that is...
It was statewide, but not nationwide.
Statewide, but not nationwide. And the reality is we live on an island. I mean, you don't have to be an expert epidemiologist to realise that to keep any of us safe, you keep all of us safe. And we have actually an advantage, a strategic advantage living on an island. So
what have you done to try and exert that advantage?
Well, we have pressed the government here, but we have been active in the executive, where we're part of that five-party power-sharing executive in the north. We've had faced a very considerable challenge when some colleagues from unionism have looked to London to take their lead from Boris Johnson, who initially, your listeners will recall, was adopting a very laissez-faire herd immunity, you know, approach, which would have proved catastrophic for all of us. Michelle O'Neill particularly, but along with my colleagues on the executive, have taken a very firm stance in supporting public health advice, in pressing for alignment north to south.
Sometimes are you knocking on a closed door then, as far as that goes?
Pardon me?
Are you knocking on a closed door when it comes to asking for an Ireland approach?
No, I don't think so. I think on the positive side of the ledger, just remember that we have a memorandum of understanding between the north and the south. We've had that now for months. Mm.
Which hasn't resulted in all Ireland actions.
No, and therein lies the problem. So what we needed at that time and what we pressed for was for Dublin really to take that ball and run with it and to demonstrate for even the sceptics or even those that were politically uncomfortable or confused public health politics with constitutional politics, to demonstrate that it just made sense and that it would be a success to have, for example, cross-border tracking and tracing and so on. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And worse than that, where there was a move, for example, to share data in terms of international travel and people landing in Belfast or Dublin. Mm. In fact, the
Which
government
Dublin has not
here,
supplied. Yeah.
Well, they didn't. They resisted that for reasons that I cannot understand. I find it quite mind-boggling. So that certainly didn't help. I mean, obviously, those in the executive, all parties, all five parties, have a responsibility to do right by public health. And there is an issue with convincing unionism or with stopping their kind of obstructionism. But where you have a passive government approach in Dublin, well, then you really find yourself in some difficulty. So the good news now, Gavin, is that finally and at last, we are seeing some level, I think, of advancement in terms of sharing data, south to north, north to south. Mm. And we need to now, even at this late stage, build on that and grab that ball and run with it hard. And that means the government in Dublin setting the pace.
Well, having passenger data and all of that is all well and good when it means to following up people who have arrived onto the island. But you've just suggested there that it was a little bit obstructionist. Is it not entirely rational and reasonable that Northern Ireland unionists, and I know you would rather this were not the case, of course, that's the reason why you're in politics, but Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom and they don't think it's in any way tenable to stop British people from being able to go to and from Britain?
Well, I mean, if you look then to, for example, Scotland and what the Scots have done, I mean, they haven't been behind the door in saying that, and I mean, they live on the island of Britain and they have been very, very clear that the assessment that is made is on the basis of public health and public health only, and that measures that are necessary to protect people's health will be taken. And interestingly enough, there was polling data, I think last weekend, Lucid Talks polled people and asked in the north, they said, like, what do you think of the idea of an all-Ireland approach? And they mentioned international travel, and their data reflected that a majority of people in the north see the good sense of acting on an all-Ireland basis and protecting the island unit from travel outside of the island onto the island, including, interestingly, according to this poll, more than a third of DUP voters. So,
but then,
I
what do unionists say though? That when your Sinn Féin colleagues are sitting down around the executive table and they put that to them, what gets said back to them? Why doesn't it happen?
Well, they have resisted it. And on the issue of international travel, I mean, the DUP, I think the Alliance Party equally were resistant to that idea. But look, I mean, I suppose this, the story of this awful virus and its evolution moves on. And I would hope that given the experience of just the huge levels of community transmission, the real worry now of different strains, be they South African or from Britain or from Brazil or anywhere else, that actually refocuses and reshapes the political conversation.
There are obviously, when it comes to political conversation, there are obviously two red lines, as you've illustrated. And of course, no one in the island would ever really countenance mounting a hard border. We've seen the hysteria that there was when it was even floated on Friday night. So nobody wants to stop Irish people north of the border from being able to come into the jurisdiction of the Republic. Likewise, no one really wants to stop British people living north of the border from going to and from Britain. So the only thing that would work would be a two-island system. Solution, and it seems that neither Dublin nor Westminster is actually pushing that too hard. Is there maybe not a responsibility on those in Stormont to actively propagate and to propose to Dublin and Whitehall a two-island solution?
And that has happened, Gavin, just so as you're aware. We certainly, for our part, have made it absolutely clear that whatever the configuration and however we express or design the supports, and mindful of the fact that we enjoy a common travel area. Mm. So there is a logic, of course, that the two islands would agree common standards, common sets of protections in terms of travel onto and off the island of Britain
proposed? Have you or someone else from the Stormont executive knocked on Dublin's door or knocked on Westminster's door and said, can you pursue this, please?
Yes, and those matters have been the subject of discussion with Dublin and with London.
And how far have they gone?
Is the short answer to that. I mean, we're not trying to engage in any form of one-upmanship or trying to kind of graft on any other politics onto this issue other than keeping people safe. Mm. And I mean, as regards kind of the border on the island and north-south travel and so on, just bear in mind, we now finally... I am 10 months on, but finally have a very strong convergence of the public health restrictions north and south. Mm. And
we're in lockdown at the same time, and it'll be relaxed at the same time, all going well on March the 5th.
Exactly, on the 5th. Well, we hope. But I mean, so anybody living on the island, you're told stay at home. Only leave your home if you have to. And there are restrictions in terms of even physical exercise. That's common north and south. So the issue of kind of travel over the border, with the exception of essential workers, is a moot point. The problem is, and let me just acknowledge that in solving the kind of international travel onto the island, that's not the silver bullet that is going to sort everything
out.
No,
there needs to be domestic restrictions and the contact tracing and the genome sequencing and everything else that you need to do. But if the Stormont executive has knocked on Westminster's door and on Dublin's door and says, can you please pursue a two-island approach, if it's actively proposed that, what sort of reception has it got?
Well, clearly it hasn't happened, so it hasn't been enthusiastically embraced or pursued. And that brings me back to the point I was making with you earlier, because all of the political obstacles and dilemmas, I think, are self-evident in this scenario. But I think it should also be self-evident that in the absence of real political drive and will, what you get is a state of inertia. And what you get is what we have seen, which has been months of a memorandum of understanding that really opened up a door for joint action and for, you know, to demonstrate success. But that wasn't grabbed and wasn't pursued. And the issue therefore arises, yes, around the executive table in Belfast. But I have to tell you, as the sovereign government in Dublin, I think there's a particular responsibility in a time of national emergency and a public health emergency that the government in Dublin doesn't announce failure or simply say, well, that can't be done. I think there is a duty on the government to set the pace on this. And I still remain hopeful that that will happen. And of course, then London has to play fair and has to be reasonable and rational. And that can be a big ask for Tories. But nonetheless, that's what we need to press.
And in the meantime, you'll continue to make the case to Unionist colleagues in Stormont that an all-in approach should be pursued.
Of course.
We will let it go for now. Mary Lou McDonald, leader of Sinn Féin and TD for Dublin Central, thank you very much for joining
Thanks
me
so much,
this
Gavin,
lunchtime on the record. Just a couple of other quick bits of breaking news. Perth, it has been announced, is going into full lockdown because they've discovered a handful of cases of community transmission there. It's Western Australia's first case in nearly 10 months. A full lockdown now for at least 5 days, and residents can only leave their home for essentials. Masks are now mandatory. Also, divided opinions on whether St. Patrick's Day should be a public holiday. One person points out that St. Bridget, she's the patron saint of printing presses, which means that maybe she might be a favourite one around Leinster House.